Mute your line, Philip.
It is what it is.
What up, y'all? Collective Minds Radio. We back in the building. After a two-week hiatus, this your host, Brother Kevin. And I'm with my other host, Rigel Starr and Mufasa Ra. What's going on, y'all? Welcome back. It's been a minute.
What's up, y'all? All praises be to the creator of the universe.
Indeed. Rigel Starr, are you with us?
I'm with you. Wouldn't be no other place else.
All right. How everybody doing out there? We got a great show for y'all today. We're talking about education, but, you know, before we get started, we want to see if anybody got any announcements. And before y'all get started, I got announcements. Just left the African Arts Festival here in St. Louis at Forest Park. They have it every year during, you know, what they call Memorial Day weekend, but it's a beautiful event. You have a lot of local business vendors. A lot of different products, a lot of different services. You know, I think it will be going on tomorrow as well. So if you get time, check it out. The vibe is always good. They have live performances. You know, they have food. Like I say, a lot of vendors, a lot of, you know, commerce going on and business happening. So it's a beautiful sight. And the love and energy is always there because you can always – it's a place where you can go where – you know, we not on no bull crap. You know what I'm saying? And the energy is always good. It's good for the family, good for the kids. They got a little kids section and all that. So, yeah, I just left there. So shout out to everybody at the African Arts Festival. And I definitely see y'all tomorrow and next year as well. So any other announcements? You got any announcements? Mufasa?
Hey, real quick, Brother Kev, did you buy anything? You buy anything this time around?
I did. I bought a few things. I bought, there was this young artist there, and I wish I had his card. A young artist from St. Louis. He did a lot of, look like Afrofuturist paintings and drawings and kind of like comic book characters for like, you know, black kids that show black characters and all that. So I bought two posters for my kids' rooms. One features a female. And then one has a young man, like a superhero, you know, he rocking an Ankh and a belt. And it's just a cool little, you know, descriptive photo. So I could put in a room just so they can have the image, you know, of black characters and all that. And I bought also bought a book from this woman called A Moment to Heal, I believe. And it was about her transformation. She said she was going through deep depression. And it's a book about how she pulled out all of that and, you know, and persevered. So I got that, and it was something else I got. I got stuff down there, but I plan on going back. I may get some more stuff, but that's what I got today, though.
Yeah, I might roll with you. I want to get some more pictures for the house.
Oh, okay, yeah, they got so much stuff, man. I just ain't have enough money. They got so much stuff in there I wanted. A lot of different books. I was looking. I did not see. I went to two book stands. I was looking for A Message to the Black Man. Couldn't find it at the two book stand. I'm sure it's there somewhere, but I just didn't find it. But I was definitely on a quest to get that book. But, you know, in any event, check out the African Arts Fest. It's at Forest Park. We'll be up there tomorrow as well. So, Rigel Starr, you got any announcements before we hop on in?
I just want to give a quick shout out to the graduates. You know, it's graduate season, and
that's
one
right.
Of our guests that we had on, Jared, graduated from SLU, the high school, the all-boy high school today. So shout
indeed,
out to him. Good job. He was doing great things. I forgot what college he's going to, but their graduation was today at the Peabody Opera House. So give a shout out to all the graduates for this year. And that's it.
Guess what's up? Show
me. All right.
You
got to get
my baby.
Up. Yes, sir.
Yeah, don't let me. I don't want to forget my baby. She graduated last week. I'm so proud of her.
Oh,
baby
yeah.
She graduated from high school, and she's prepared to go off to college and, you know, get a career in the nursing field. So shout out to her and all the other graduates as well. And I also want
to
say, excuse me, family, if y'all can hear the Honorable Elijah first. The Honorable Elijah, not Elijah, I'm sorry, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan playing in the background. I am in travels from Chicago, from visiting Mount Maryam in Chicago. The minister spoke this morning, and it was a beautiful, well, I swear it was a beautiful message. This was my first time visiting the Miles in Chicago, and actually my first time seeing him very kind live in the flesh. So it was a beautiful thing. And so for me, shout out to Miles 28 in St. Louis. That's where I'm riding with now. We grouped up and we on the highway headed back home. So shout out to Miles 28 in St. Louis, and shout out to the Honorable Elias Muhammad, and the Honorable Louis Farrakhan for steering black people in the proper direction. That's my announcement for today.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you for that announcement. And, yeah, it seems like that was a powerful trip. And, yeah, all praise
yes,
to
was,
the brothers.
Bro.
Yep, all
yes,
praise to the brothers putting in that work, so. Without further ado, family, again, this is Collective Minds Radio. Please give us a call. We are discussing education, and does it empower black children or does it mentally enslave them? Give us a call. Let us know your opinion. The number is 929-477-1697. And we have a special guest with us today. We have Ms. Shamari Hayes. She is a educator, and she's going to, you know, dialogue with us, build with us, and shed some light on this topic. Ms. Shamari Hayes, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, guys. How's everybody doing today?
Hey, how you doing?
We are doing well. Doing well. How are you?
I'm really good. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show and talk to you guys.
Indeed. We thank you for, you know, sharing some of your evening with us today to discuss this topic. So I guess before we get started, if you could, you know, give us your background and then I guess what led you into the education field.
Okay. I am a St. Louis native. I grew up in North City, St. Louis. I knew I wanted to be a teacher since I was in third grade. I went through the St. Louis Public School District all my scholastic career. I went away to Mizzou for college. I got a bachelor's in interdisciplinary studies with an emphasis in education, black studies, and human development and family studies because I knew I wanted to teach in a district that was similar to how I was brought up. I have my master's now in elementary administration, and I'm currently working on my PhD in educational leadership and policy. I'm very well aware of the challenges that black and brown children face every day and the roles that the school system can play in those challenges. And then also the ways that they can help to kind of buffer some of those issues as well. I have spoken on a couple of forums on cultural competency. I'm doing a lot of training on that. I'll be leading a couple of professional developments in reference to cultural competency in education. And so, yeah, I'm just fighting a good fight, trying to make sure that children have a chance, right, maneuver through the system that has been set in place for them.
That's right. That's right. Indeed.
Go ahead.
So,
go ahead. Snap it
that's
up.
That's right. yep. So,
I heard you guys give a shout out earlier, your announcements.
Mm-hmm.
Just a plug, on June 9th, there will be a conference. I'll be a part of it. There are going to be a whole bunch of amazing speakers. It's called the Crooked Room Conference. My sister, Ms. Jaquie, and E. Nicole put this thing together. It is fantastic. I think everyone should come out. It is free. You can go, just Google Crooked Room Conference 2018 tickets, and you can get your registration going, and everything's free, and it's going to be amazing. They have topics. We're covering the angry black woman stereotype and how it affects black girls in school. There are going to be some topics on Afro-sexology, if I'm not mistaken. And, oh, the sister, Dr. Warren Grice, that sister can speak on some cultural competency. So she'll be in the building. It's going to be an amazing lineup of folks that are going to help our community. So come out. Join us.
Indeed. Indeed. You heard it right here, family, on Collected Minds. You know, please go check out the conference if you have time. It should be a powerful event. I'm looking forward to, you know, stopping by and seeing what's going on. So it should be powerful. We could probably, do a recap before we end the show as well. Okay. So what we want to do now, Shamar, what we want to do now is, this is Collected Minds, so we want to give everyone a chance to voice their opinion on the topic. So we're going to defer, you know, to the guests real quick, and then we'll let you weigh in on the question, and then we'll build on some more educational topics as well. Is that cool?
Okay.
All right, cool. So I guess we can go with Rigel Starr first. The question posed this week is, does education empower or mentally enslave black children? What are your thoughts?
I think it has the capability of doing both. I think it depends on the home, the student, the parents, things like that, because we have different influences. So I think it has the capability of doing both. It's very capable. And I think the important thing is for us to be aware of those two capabilities. So that way we'll know how to, I guess, depending on what we're trying to gain. You know, I would like to think nobody's really trying to gain mental enslavement, but depending on what you're trying to gain is going, you know, to help determine how you react to it. But I do think it has the capability of doing both. I just think it's just a matter of each individual level of awareness and understanding, as well as their influence, social environment, different things like that. And I'll leave it at that. We can kind of go into that a little more later, but that's really my base premise.
Indeed. Rigel Starr, Mufasa Ra, my brother. Does American
because
education empower or mentally enslave black children?
And the child don't mean,
I'm going to say it mentally enslaves, especially coming off listening to my brother speak today. It just it really put in my mind how my opinion is that we need to separate from this American system. It ain't been good for black people since we've been here. So me myself, I don't want no part of none of the educational system. Nothing that entails with an American system. In my opinion, when our children, as we go through, you know, elementary school, high school, you're kind of indoctrinated to be a slave or a sheep for American society. You know, you're kind of molded into doing something to be a worker bee. You know, for the system. Now, like Rigel said, depending on your parents and whatever else you may come in contact with, it's things outside of the American school system that you can latch on to put a knock on yourself, that empower you to do more productive things for yourself and your people. But for the regular Joe who just may be going through school, say elementary or high school, if it's not really something in them, that sparks them to want to do more for themselves and their people. I feel like it molds you into being a place for America. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Indeed, indeed. Appreciate the bill. Just next time, brother, if you could, Mufasa, speak up just a little bit. We hear Farrakhan in the background, which is good. You know, that's the brother minister. But if you could speak up so we can just hear what you're saying a little bit, that'd be good.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No worries. And then if you could mute your line while we move forward. So what we want to do now, I'm going to just bring the guests in, and I'll say my thoughts. After we let the guest, Ms. Shamara Hayes, share her thoughts on the question that we have this week. So we'll ask you, Shamara Hayes, does the American education system empower or mentally enslave Black children?
I think that is a challenging question to answer. I think that there are different types of systems in place when it comes to the education system. So that's a pretty vague question, right? Does the American system enslave or empower Black children? So I'm going to be very open to say that I'm going to use this blanket statement that does not apply to every single system, but gives us a bigger, paints a picture of the bigger picture, right?
Right.
Chomsky talks about, he's like this philosopher in education. He talks about the system being broken for people, marginalized groups, especially lower SES, lower social economic status, folks who are in poverty, and saying that education system was formed to keep you educated enough that you can function and do these jobs that most folks don't want to do, but then not educating you enough that you are able to challenge the system that works against you, right? And so that has been my experience where I've seen some of those things where we're teaching marginalized groups of folks to kind of fall in place. We're teaching them to mentally be prepared for positions that they're not able to question authority, right? So these positions where you have direct supervisors, where you have folks who are directly over you, where you don't get this mental freedom. Whereas he was speaking about higher class folks with more money are having systems where it teaches them to be more creative, to think outside of the box, to challenge authority, right? Yeah. I remember when I was younger, I had the privilege, right? I put my privilege on the forefront because that makes a big difference when we're talking about the education system. I grew up in poverty, but, hey, I had the privilege of going to a school that was shaped and geared more toward the way we educate higher class folks. And so in that, I noticed that things that my friends who were in different schools did not have the liberty of doing, I had that freedom. I had, I remember protesting when I was in high school, you know, and it was initially the principal looked at us like, what are you doing? We have a rule. This is in place. You need to follow it. But after a while,
can
he saw the power that
we
had.
I'm sorry, not to cut you off.
It's simple. It was because it didn't seem like a big deal to the adults, but to us, it seemed like a big deal. That was a rule when I was younger, which wasn't too long ago, right? The tall tee fad, it was going on. Everybody wanted to wear tall tees. We weren't a uniform school, and so technically, we should have been able to wear what we wanted to wear because it wasn't a part of any policy. But because some folks had said it was associated with gang relations, our principal was like, you guys can't wear that. We don't want any problems. But we knew, right, that there may just have been a disconnect between our culture and what folks were saying about our culture. That was a false narrative, right? It didn't necessarily apply to us. We weren't in gangs. This was just a trend, a fashion trend at the moment. And so we protested. Right. We all wore our tall tees because we said that you will not dictate our narrative. We didn't use those scholarly words, of course, but we thought that we had been wronged and that the rules were now shaped to go against things that were, at the time, important to our culture, right? Because if you start dictating this one thing, what else will you dictate about us? What else will you start to change about us just because you felt like it wasn't acceptable? And so the entire school, it was a diverse school, racially diverse school, we all band together and we did a protest and we actually won. Right. And as no one got in trouble, as an act of submission, our principal then put on a tall tee to show that he understood where we were coming from, right? So it gave us that sense of power, that sense of taking ownership of our own education within that school. So that was powerful to us. But can you imagine had it been done at a school that was not shaped that way?
Right.
Like, and
right,
then the narrative already was that this was gang-related. So can you imagine the outcome had it not been a school that was geared toward teaching in a way that was not the norm for Black children? Right.
Indeed.
It could have been
yeah.
it could have been way more traumatic. It could have been traumatic, right, the outcome. And so I think that our system as a system does sometimes make it so that Black and brown children are taught to continue to be in this submissive role and this minority filling role in our country. But I also think that because I've had these experiences where minority children had these opportunities, it does not have to be that way. And as an educator, I make it so that my classroom is not that way. So it can.
Okay.
And I agree with the sister that in Mufasa that family plays a big role too. You don't realize how much control and power you have as a parent when you become an advocate for your child and check into the classroom and see what's going on and see, is that classroom enslaving your child or is it empowering them? Check into it.
That's right. That's right. That's right. To all the parents,
hey,
out
Brother
there. That's right. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Brother Kev, I just wanted to do a check. Can you hear me a little better?
Oh, yeah. Now, that's perfect. That's much better. That's perfect. That's perfect. So, yeah, we're here. This is Collective Minds Radio. We are discussing education, particularly as it pertains to Black children, Black boys and girls. This is Collective Minds with Elijah Starr, Mufasa Rod, and Brother Kevin. We have a special guest, Shamara Hayes, who is an educator in this field. Please give us a call to share your thoughts. The number is 929-477-1697. And the question was, does American education empower and enslave Black children? So like the guest said, that is a, you know, it's a broad question. It's loaded. There's a lot of things that go into that particular question. For me, I feel like American education is strictly training. You know what I'm saying? There's no such thing as real education in Western education, in my opinion. Because when I look at, you know, my experiences through school and the things that I was taught, as I've gotten older, I've realized that this society makes money off of people being ignorant. You see, and that goes from the legal system. You can look at the medical industry. You can look at credit finance. You know, all these systems are set up basically to, you know, basically it costs a lot to be ignorant. It costs more to be ignorant than it does to have the knowledge. So if you're ignorant in a lot of these systems that we come into the real world and have to deal with, then it's going to cost you money. And I think that American educational system, even if we take Black and white out of it, I think it creates a society to where, you know, when you get out of school, you're really ignorant on a lot of things, if that makes sense. You know, Albert Einstein has a great quote that said, education is not the learning of facts, but the training of the mind to think. And I think our system doesn't really allow people to think, because if you think about it, basically what you have to do in school is memorize. You know, those who memorize the best and can, you know, recall it for the test, those are the ones who typically excel. You know, but then you have creative students, you have people who are good in arts, you have right brain students, you have left brain. So I don't think our system accounts for all the individuality and the differences that each individual has, but it kind of conforms and makes cookie cutter, and like I said, trains you to be a mindless consumer. Now, just real quick, my second point is, as it pertains to Black children, I do not think that it empowers us. Because if you look at the subjects in school, you have math, which is probably the only objective subject in school, meaning, you know, it's pretty much what it is what it is. 2 plus 2 is 4, you know, so on and so forth. It's pretty much objective. But these other subjects are very subjective to the person who's doing the research. If you want to look at science, the person who's telling a story, if you want to look at history, you know, English, you know, all these things are very subjective. And I feel like for black children, these particular subjects, I'm talking about history, social studies, English, they're not really set up to empower black children because a lot of the stuff is whitewashed. You know, we're getting a different type of narrative than something that's going to empower us, you see. And I think when you're growing up and you're a kid, these are the things that kind of shape your identity when it comes to, you know, learning and being, you know, socializing in school. So I'll just say this to end, and then we'll get into some more questions. I think the best thing that you can get out of the American Western educational system is socializing and building a network. You build relationships. That's the best thing that you're going to get because, as we all know on this line, it's all about who you know at the end of the day. So the education is really on the back burner. And like I say, you learn how to socialize and you learn how to build relationships and build network. But as far as education and empowering black children, I would have to say no on that tip. So now I do want to
Let me add something real fast because I agree with you. I do agree with you, but I do want to add this a little piece here. With all the things that you said, people still must know that it does not have to enslave them. All the things
this
that you
true.
Said, it does not have to be that way. And that,
this is
and
true.
That's all. I just want to, because I don't want people to think that is, you know, like they're doomed. It doesn't have. They don't.
Right,
have,
right, right.
You know,
no.
It doesn't have to affect them. Although you're right. It doesn't have to affect them in that way.
Right,
it's the way
that is
out
true.
Of it. You know, it's how the, like I said, it's the individual level of awareness and understanding and perception and how much they know about themselves and understand life and its whole. You know, if you can understand
right,
life,
right.
then you don't have to get so entangled with, and I've expressed this to you guys with my experience with school. I didn't become so entangled with the education where I was just like, okay, this is the real deal, what they're telling me and what they're teaching me. I didn't get so entangled. You know, I knew how to separate. So it doesn't have to become what you're saying, although I do agree with what you're saying that, like I said before in the beginning, it definitely has the capability of doing those things, but it doesn't have to. And
I agree.
Yeah, I got to add
agree.
Something too, Brother Gale.
Yes, sir.
Just because I know my phone was sounding so crazy earlier, but I'm appreciate what Shamari said because he, even though y'all couldn't hear me, everything he said, I 100% agree with, which is what I was trying to get across as well. But with what Roger just said, you are right. It doesn't have to be that way. But in my opinion, the American system wants it to be that way, and that's the direction that they try to mold us in. So like you said, we have to be, if it's not in you and you're not strong, then you don't have a support system outside of the American educational system, it will you know, push you in that direction of slavery.
Indeed. Now let's bring our guests back in because I want to ask you because now May 17th of this year marked the 64th year anniversary, which happened in 1954, of the Brown versus the Board of Education, when they you know, they determined that school segregation was illegal. And then, you know, shortly after that, they started doing the what they call the desegregation program, and basically busing, you know, black kids from predominantly black neighborhoods into majority white schools. You know, so I just want to get your opinion on that, and what type of effect do you think, you know, that can have on a black child going from, you know, the inner city to a majority white school?
I think that in many cases with all things that it depends on how things are executed, right? So we can have these ideas of what works best for children, but then once they're implemented into the school system, how do they actually function? So in theory, we tried this separate but equal, because in theory, being in a different space than someone else but still getting the same resources should equate equity, right? It should still be equal, but we realized that the function didn't work. So then we say, let's deseg, right? Let's just do this deseg program. Let's push all these folks together. So ideally, if you get folks together that are different backgrounds who were at first receiving different resources, things should pan out, mm-hmm. right? But in reality, it didn't function that way, right? So we know that for us to even have to have a program that was designated to implement the law, to enforce the law of desegregation, means that somebody wasn't doing something right. And so I was listening to a forum, and a lady was speaking about it. It was a older white sister that was talking about how she was a part of a board that was made specifically to make sure black and brown children were not mistreated when they were put into these DSEG programs. And she was saying that once they did the DSEG program, the white administrator said, yeah, it's cool, we'll welcome it, right? Some of them did. Mm-hmm. They tried every loophole they could, but couldn't avoid it. And so they would still have they would have segregated schools, right? You'll see the start of white classes being identified as advanced or, you know, advanced placement. And then you'll have the black folks or the other minorities that were in the schools, they would be in these remedial classes. So it was still segregation. Right. Or they'll have them in different sections of the building. So it's still segregated. And sometimes I like to put things into perspective. I'm not even 30 yet, okay? And I was a part of the GSA program. And I was in school.
Okay.
That wasn't a long time ago. And we like to think about these things as though these occurred in the past, but in reality, I was in high school and they still had white kids that were bused into my school from the county.
Mm.
So and that wasn't long ago either, right? So that being said, these are things that are still facing us today. We're still staring them in the face and trying to figure out how do we maneuver through this law that was passed forever ago, right? We like to think about forever ago. But it still are affecting our babies today. What does it actually look like? I know for myself, and I can only speak from my experience because I haven't delved deep into the DSEG program, I know it was a terrible experience for me. I was in kindergarten when I was bused out into a county school, and they threatened my mom to fail me in kindergarten. And this was before we did all the testing. So I was like, was I not taking naps at the right time? Like, what have I been
doing
in kindergarten that warranted me being retained? So my mom removed me from that school. I went to my neighborhood school where I excelled. I had staff that looked like me, and the ones that didn't look like me, they genuinely cared about me. And so they weren't forced to be there, you know, and that makes a big difference too. Whereas, you may not always look like me, but if you genuinely make a decision with education, we'll go into that later, on my culture, there is a greater chance that I'll have a better opportunity, you know? And so I went back to this school system where I excelled, and I went to another school, and I kept going, and I am where I am because of folks within those particular schools. Taking it outside of a system and looking at the folks themselves, they genuinely cared and they tried and they took it a step further to explore the areas that they were weak in and didn't know much about, and then they tried to apply their learning to my education. And that's a big deal. The DSEG program may have worked for some folks, I'm not sure, but my personal experience in it, it didn't function well.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Now, I don't know if you know, but the DSEG program in this area is actually coming to an end. They're slowly stopping the program because I had my son out there for, I believe, first grade, and it didn't really go well. But I gave it a try because I was a product of DSEG, and I kind of, you know, I had to. And then my parents, my mother and my father, they kind of encouraged it. They didn't see anything wrong with it. But I had my own ideas as I've come into my own awareness and own consciousness. So I ended up pulling them out. But they were saying that they're going to end the DSEG program unless you have a sibling already enrolled. You see, so it stopped 2019 will be the last year that they'll accept new enrollments. After that, you
goodbye
have to have a sibling.
Good riddance.
Right. So I just want to ask, yeah, anybody on the line, how do y'all feel about that? I'm sure I know how Shamara may feel, but how do you feel about them ending that? And then it's just going back to, you know, you go to school in your neighborhood or, you know.
Can I say that I want to be very clear that I'm not opposed to diversity in schools by any means. Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to it because clearly it allows you these opportunities. I grew up in a majority, if not all, black neighborhood. And so I didn't see anything outside of my neighborhood until I went to school. I saw TV, right, but we know the issues with media. But I didn't see and I didn't have that one-on-one experience with folks of different backgrounds, not just racially, but economically and religiously.
Right,
I didn't have that because my neighborhood was pretty much the same. And so going to the schools that I went to, I was able to get those experiences, which makes me culturally fluid. That's a new term, right? New coin term. Mm. Culturally fluid. And so I'm not opposed to diversity in school, but that DSEG program where it was forced upon everybody who's in this program, it was almost this forced let's get along, and we hadn't dissected the issues that caused us to be so separate for this hundreds of years. We hadn't dissected those issues.
Go.
We hadn't addressed them.
We
put a Band-Aid over a war wound, and then we tried to force it in and say, let's make everything fine. It didn't work that way. The school that I went to, everybody that came there, they weren't forced to be there. You know, the families that decided to send their kids to school with people of different background, they weren't made to do that. They weren't made to accept these folks. And so it was a different feel, you know, and it functioned differently. So I'm not opposed to diversity in schools. I just said
now,
the fourth part didn't work well for me.
There you go. Because like I said, I was a product of DSEG, and everything you just said was exact and correct, because there were times, like, in elementary school, you know, where all the black kids rode the bus together, we had kids that were put in special ed, and I knew for a fact, I rode the bus with these kids every day, that there was nothing wrong with these kids.
That was a common thing, definitely a common thing in a DSEG program.
Yeah, like, there was nothing wrong with these kids, and, you know, they used to chalk it up, I guess, as behavior and all these things, but when you put a kid in special ed, that pretty much ruins that kid's mentality. You know what I'm saying? It kind of cripples him to thinking he's special or he can't learn or he can't do this and that. But I'm telling, like, it was some intelligent kids that I would talk to every day, and these kids were in special ed. I used to be like, dude, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, like,
so,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just to be clear, all right, there's already this stigma on special education. And so to place a child who has not actually, who's not in need of these resources that's provided in special education system, it does, it's almost like a mental warfare, right? It does mess with their minds. It makes their self-efficacy lower if they do not qualify, they do not actually qualify for these services. It will mess with them because it's stigmatized already. Then on top of that, when you're going back to your neighborhood, and when you're away from the school system that says that something's wrong with you, because that is the idea when you're not actually needing those services. And then you go back to your neighborhood and everyone else is like you and everything else is fine with them. It does make you feel some kind of way. So then you get this disconnect from school, which leads, we know low self-efficacy will lead to a lower ability to actually do things, not because you are initially unable to do those things, but because you've internalized this idea that people have put on you that you are less than or you're not good enough or there are some issues wrong with you. Not that some system has failed you. That's not the narrative you're getting. You're getting that something is wrong with me. So even if you're the strongest of the strong-minded folks, when someone's constantly telling you that, you start to feel it. And then that self-fulfilled prophecy, right? Like once you start saying it, then you start actually acting in ways that fulfill what they've already said to you.
Yeah.
And so that's problematic, right? And so then we got it's generational. We know that parents pass down their knowledge to their children, and it's cyclical, and it keeps going. So what happens when a system starts to fail these kids? And then it's generational. Then what do we do? What do we have? How does that look and how does that function?
Indeed.
Let me ask y'all
indeed.
A question real fast. This ties in what y'all are talking about right now. Do you think that as a collective, though, black people operate under a different frequency, and that's why we may need to learn and be taught under a different frequency and vibration as other groups of people? I'm going to throw that question out there to y'all.
Well, let me just share this. This would be my answer, because there was an article from the Atlanta Black Star where they said it was an article basically highlighting the things that black people lost as a result of the Brown versus Board of Education decision. So as we start to go to school, you know, these integrated schools, what did we lose? So according to the article, we lost, you know, dedicated teachers. We lost jobs. Black teachers lost jobs. We had strong principals. There were order in black schools before desegregation. We had high expectations of our children. You know, the more the community was more involved, the parental support was more there before desegregation. And after desegregation, I don't know if y'all know this, that's when the term acting white started to be used and equated with academic excellence. You see what I'm saying? That's where the term acting white started. But before then, you know, we never used any terms like that or equated that with, you know, being smart or whatever. So the article ended by saying, which I think this is profound, ever since black kids started attending integrated school, it seems black kids started to perform more poorly in these settings. And I think that's profound. So that goes to the point that you were just asking, Mufasa, do we learn different? You know, what's the deal that we tend to, when we're out, you know, then this is generalizing, but when we're out in a majority, you know, white setting or white school, we tend to perform more poorly as a group. So that's just my response to that question. I don't know if Roger Starr, the guest, Shamar Hayes, want to step in and comment. Did you have a comment on his question?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I think that we have to realize that America, as we know it, right, like not this foundation of America was based on this idea of a hierarchy and on this idea of white supremacy. And so we all view everything through different lenses, depending on what group or what subculture you are a part of. And so therefore, because we view things through different lenses, not that we're just different species, but we have these different experiences. And so that affects us in education. So when you're coming into a classroom with babies, you serve them. That's another thing I've seen has been an issue sometimes with teachers. They think that kids are supposed to automatically obey authority. But you are there to serve them. Therefore, you got to research, just like if you were going for a job interview. You want to research the company that you're interviewing for, right? You want to know a little bit about them so that you're able to speak their language when you're talking to them. Same way in the classroom. As a teacher, you need to come in humble. You need to come in doing your research. I'm not talking about some, what is her name? Lord, is it Ruby Payne? The white lady did the ethnography about black folks, poor black folks. Not like that. Don't come in with an authority because you've done some research. But come in understanding that they may have a culture that you are not aware of, that you're not used to. And you need to be prepared to serve them in the way, meet them where they learn. What's her name? Gloria Lassen-Billen has talked about culturally relevant pedagogy. clearly that's a thing. Clearly we've agreed on this as a country, that there are some differences in different cultures. We know this, right? We used to be called the melting pot, now we're called a salad, meaning that we're no longer melted together, but that we're comprised of different ingredients. They're all delicious when they come together, but they're different, and we need to respect those differences. And by ignoring it in the classroom with this colorblind theory of education, it's not the most effective for any children. You need to come in and you need to learn something about their culture, show value in their culture first, and then teach them. And y'all not going to like this because I know y'all perspective on things. But you do have to teach about the dominant culture, because otherwise you send them up to failure. They live in America, right? They're not living in a bubble. They're living in America. I need our babies to be culturally fluid. I need them to be able to take pride in themselves first, foremost, and then still be able to speak the language of the dominant culture. We have to come in a way that works for them. If we're taught something in a PD, if we're taught something in school that we've tried and tried and it does not work in this classroom with these black and brown babies, then it's time for us to reevaluate and try something new. Because I don't care what the statistics say. I don't care what the numbers say. We know, I think you said something earlier about math being the only subject that's objective. I come to realize that it's not, right? Like, numbers can be manipulated as well. We have to come into this knowing that we're here to serve them, and we have to shape our way of teaching around what works for them. And another thing that we don't like to realize is that black folks don't have a single narrative, right? We don't have these single experiences. Right. So what works for this group of black babies this year may not work next year. Stop forcing it. Just because this group of kids like hip-hop and that's how you taught them math, this one may not like that. We have to come in humble and ready to be able to shape our lessons to fit them, not the other way around. And that's what I've seen a lot of.
This is true. Yep. I definitely agree with that. And you hit on something important, because I do feel, because we do need to learn about the quote-unquote dominant culture.
Mm-hmm.
See,
I hate that
speaking,
term.
I know, but you know, right, exactly. But speaking, speaking as a black man.
The other culture.
Check this out, Mufasa. Speaking as a black man and who was once a black child, I feel like you should learn about other cultures, be engaged and learn and share different experiences. But my thing is, I feel like black people have an identity crisis. So when you don't really have a culture of your own and you're grabbing from here, grabbing from there, then it becomes a problem. See, you can have a Chinese American or Chinese a person from China come over here and assimilate and enjoy American culture and do all these things, but they still have that foundation. You see, they still have their heritage and foundation, which is something that has been stripped from us. So going into history, which is where we kind of get our foundation from, since we, you know, I'm speaking generally, a lot of us may not get it from our great-grandparents or our grandparents to pass stories down to us, you know, that are empowering. So we have to derive and get our history from school. You see what I'm saying? And they give us that slave narrative, you know, to where you're submissive and subordinate and you were savages in Africa and then you came, we civilized you and brought you over here. Yeah, you went through slavery. It was bad. Martin Luther King, you all free. You know what I'm saying? Type of deal. Yeah. So my thing is, since we don't really have a culture, I think it kind of hurts us to learn other cultures without having, you know, a particular foundation ourselves.
That's absolutely true. No, that's absolutely the core of what is going on, right? Is you hit the nail on the head. We have to have that solid foundation. And this is one thing I tell my family members, I tell other folks, that in the school system, there is a lot of politics because it is a business. That just is what it is. It is a lot of politics. In your household, you get to speak freely. You can tell your children the truth. Sometimes I remember being in college, I would get so frustrated when I relearned something that I had learned when I was younger and said, why the heck am I just finding this out in college, right? What about the other babies who didn't make it to college? They didn't get this relearning of what should have been taught to them before, this truth, this hard truth, this honesty that we didn't learn about the history of Thanksgiving. Why in the world would I not know about the truth until I got to college? Why would we not start to dissect that until then? It's too late, right? Like, because the folks who made it there clearly maneuvered through it, and the folks who didn't make it to college did not find that way to maneuver through, right, in most cases. And so that foundation is important. We have to preach to the folks in our households, all these folks who are raising all of these beautiful babies that are coming into our school systems, that it starts with you, that you have to tell your children the truth. Make it so that your children question authority in a very respectful way. But also make sure that they know that their roots are rooted. The tradition is that we honor our ancestors, right? I mean, honor our elders.
Right.
That's totally okay.
Yes.
We teach that a lot in the black household, but we don't teach them, question them if you feel that this does not make sense. You can question in a respectable way.
Right.
You can ask your teacher, are you sure that's what happened? So what about these folks? What was going on with black folks at this time when you're teaching us about this part of history? History is time. It is not color. So ask those questions. Teach your kid to ask those questions. That is going to make for a richer education for everybody in their classroom if you teach your kid, right? We can say that teachers are supposed to do certain things, but I'm going to tell you the truth. The education system has failed teachers, too, because we're just people. And so things that you're saying that our babies should know, they didn't learn it. Oh, we ain't going to talk about that. Y'all can get me in trouble.
That's a whole nother question.
But there's no universal requirement. I've been preaching this. I've been writing it in every paper. I've been screaming it to the hilltops. There is no universal requirement in upper education, in college, for real diversity training, right? So you have a lot of folks who are coming into areas because we have programs that pay you to teach in, quote-unquote, urban communities. You have folks who have not had these one-on-one interactions with folks from these communities coming in, getting these things paid off, but they don't have this background, right? And so they're teaching your babies what they were taught, which were false narratives, who were taught by folks who didn't know these narratives, right? And so it's cyclical. It's passed down to them. What happened? Mm-hmm. How powerful is it? If you teach your babies to question and to go against narratives that do not freaking make sense. Teach your babies that. Nobody's going to threaten you to lose your job if you're a parent teaching your kids the truth.
Yep.
You know, and that's powerful for the whole classroom because now they see little Tyrone in the classroom who's this respectful child but also challenging authority, and there's nothing wrong with challenging it. But we don't teach
that's
that.
Right.
We teach speak when spoken to. Don't say nothing. This grown folks conversation. We got this.
This is
me talking about our family, right? This is me governing us, airing our dirty laundry between us, right? We have to teach our babies not to be quiet all the time, and that sometimes it is okay. I know we have this stigma in the black community about. And it's not just the black community. It's a lot of marginalized groups, right? Because I was reading about the Apache Natives who were the kids were joking around and pretending to be like the white man. And then the mother came over and said, well, you better cut that out. It was almost taboo. Stop acting like the white man and you're going to become him. Right? That was in one of our readings. And that was in my school system, okay? We read this. And so this idea that we don't want our kids to grow up so loose is partially because we have this stigma on how white folks raise their kids, and then also because our consequences are graver. And so we put these restraints on our babies, and I understand it. I do. But within this system of education, I need there to be met in the middle. I need educators to realize that it's okay for black kids to question authority, and I need parents to realize in this system, in this education system, that I want my baby to respectfully, because I don't want them getting in trouble. I ain't saying go out there and tell Tyrone the clown on his teacher. I'm saying tell him it's okay to say, well, in this year, this is what was going on in the black community, so how does that tie in, right? They're still questioning without being disrespectful. I want our babies to get empowered mentally. And we
there
can do
go.
That at home because there's nobody's going to threaten our job with that.
Yep. There you go. That's perfect. That's part of the code is the education starts at home. And, you know, you cannot rely on the schools to, be the only education that your child receives. So it's definitely up to the parent to do their due diligence and make sure that their kids are on point. And like you said, asking questions respectfully, questioning authority respectfully, they do have that right, to ask those questions and to grow. And if somebody, I tell my kids, if somebody don't want to answer your questions as an adult, then you should just get away from them because that's not, a person you want to be around. You should be free to ask questions because that's how you learn. But yeah, now I want to switch topics a little bit. Now this may be a little controversial, and I want to get everybody's opinion on this. Rise of Star, Mufasa Ra, and the guests. We're gonna let the guests go first, because we hear a lot these days about intersectionality, the gay agenda affecting the black community. Now, I haven't confirmed this, but I hear that they're going, and maybe you can confirm or say otherwise, that I hear that they're going to start teaching homosexuality in, like, sex ed classes or in some particular class in, you know, maybe middle school or high school. So when it comes to teaching homosexuality in high school, do you think it's necessary, or do you have a problem with it? Are you indifferent? Do you encourage it? Or what is your stance on teaching homosexuality in schools?
I had a sister ask me this, right? Because she can't call me infuriated and told me that they're teaching homosexuality in school. And I asked her, what do you mean? Like, what are they teaching? Are they teaching how to do it? Like, what are they teaching? So what in particular are folks asking about? Because I haven't had any memo or anything that says that anything about it in particular. So I'm curious to know. I have to get a narrower of a question, like a more specific question. Like, what exactly is being taught?
What I'm seeing is they're just explaining that this is an alternative lifestyle. Basically, it's an option if you want to go that route. Like I said, I haven't confirmed that this is actually being taught in schools. I've only read a couple articles that were mentioning that these things will be talked about. And from what I gather, like I said, they're just teaching that, okay, this is an, you know, alternative lifestyle that you can partake in. So I don't know if they get into particulars as far as, or I've heard that they may, you know, there may be books with, like, gay characters in them, you know, things like that, just kind of pushing the envelope because, like I say, back in my day, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that outright as it is today. So that's why I was just kind of asking, like, what are your views, and just kind of get a sense of, do you think that's okay as far as if they were just to teach it, like, you know, in sex ed, how we have, how they just talk about the sexual organs and this and that, and they may get into some small particulars about how to or engage or whatever. So they just may throw that, you know, gay is just an alternative lifestyle. Like, this is an option that you have as a person. I don't know. I think that
the school system, I think that as adults, I feel like sometimes we don't realize the kids are aware of a lot of stuff before we introduce it to them, right? So they are aware of things that are going on in the world. They are aware of social norms. They are aware of differences in folks. They are aware, but they are not in-depthly aware of things and the results of certain things and how things function in our society. They get that things are going on. And so the school has always, what the school should touch on and what they shouldn't touch on has always been a hot topic of conversation because we haven't decided fully as a society where we draw the lines on education, right? What's our household teaching and what's our schooling teaching? What's a formal education versus what's something that's because it's so deeply rooted in our quote-unquote morality, which is talk on that another day, it gets sticky on what should be taught in education when it's a hot topic in the society right now. We haven't come to 100% agreement. But I think a lot of times the things that I've noticed with the school system when it comes to LGBT conversations is that the purpose is to make sure that kids are learning to be accepting of folks' differences. So So that's whether it's racial,
gotcha,
whether it's economic, whether it's various sexualities, whatever the case may be. It's not whether you agree with things or not. It's about, I have to teach these children that people are people, and we
right.
have to be respectful of other people. Now, I don't know to what
right.
extent things are going. I don't know what teachers are teaching. I haven't seen a particular curriculum that covers any of these things, but this is
mm-hmm.
my opinion, is that maybe
right.
it's to show, hey, stuff going on, society has, it's always changing, right? Our sense of morality, I'm doing air quotes, is always changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want kids to be aware of people's differences. Whether you accept it or not, you have to be. And one of the ladies that I worked with on a cultural competency group, she was.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how we would talk to teachers about presenting things. She said the same way, you may not like to wear suits at home or whatever. Like, this is your job, and your job is to make sure that you're presenting the information, right? So when
yeah.
you come in,
yeah.
you can't come in leggings, right? Even whether you like it or not, you can't come in leggings. You have to make sure that you're presenting this information so the kids are aware and they can come to their conclusions on how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the sole purpose of that, I could be wrong, but I think the sole purpose is just to teach children that people are different. It's no different
right.
than any other marginalized group. People are different, and don't be a jerk to people. Like, that's just it. But
right.
I don't know
okay.
what's actually being taught. I don't know.
Okay, indeed, indeed. And now, Roger Starr.
Yes.
Are you with us? How do you feel about, you know, maybe teaching homosexuality or teaching tolerance, or maybe having some homosexual characters in a book that's mandatory reading, or, you know, just introducing, I guess, the lifestyle, or, you know, that type of lifestyle to in school.
Well,
how do you feel about that?
Unfortunately, I think the reason that it will take place, and it have taken place so far, and it is because of the way, like I guess said, the way things evolve. Nothing is staying the same. Things change. And the harsh reality is that you may have a transgender kid in the class right now. You know, you may
right,
have a
right.
gay
this
kid
true.
In the class right now. So
this
I,
is true.
Just as I guess said, I think it starts off as trying to teach our students how to accept differences, because they may have it may be another pupil in the class that, you know, that is like that. So it starts off that way. The danger is that it does progress, and I think that's the reason that you ask this question, is because we know it starts off that way, but that's a subtle way to start, and then it gets subtler, you know, or more and more and more, it progresses more and more, the more information, and they may even have gay teachers, because at the end of the day, another important thing that Mr. Chamari had already mentioned, that the teachers are just human too, and unfortunately,
right.
they may have gay teachers, and since they're not perfect, you know, humans, I mean, teachers are not another species of humans. They just another human. They may, in their own era and ego, things that just humans deal with, they may feel the need to say something a little more to their class because they're defending their own actions. So it's a thin line. But
right.
I'm saying those are some of the concerns, because I understand why you asked that question. Because
yeah, well, I was asking because, yeah, it can get, and this is why I asked, because I feel like, this is just my opinion, but I feel like the LGBT or homosexual lifestyle is pushed on to the black community. That's just my opinion,
mm-hmm.
you know. Of course, I could be wrong,
yeah.
but I feel like that agenda is pushed on us, so I was just curious as to how
right.
that plays into education, you know.
And
yeah,
I
yeah.
agree that it is, but I think what they do, like I was trying to say, is that off with a legitimate reason, meaning these kids may have, you know, other students in their classroom that is part of that LGBTQ community, you know, so they will try to teach, like the guest said, provide some sort of information as a way to let the teach the students, hey, to accept everyone, you know, and be nice, and we are different. So they use it. That's why I said it can start off that way, but as time
right.
goes on, it will get more aggressive and more aggressive, where, like, you listen in the book,
yeah.
and then the teachers who also could, you know, you have gay teachers as well, who would also begin to
right.
say more. You know, they may feel the need to express a little bit more because of, you know, they may be defending their own actions. So
gotcha.
it's a thin line. I personally feel like I was saying earlier, and I think someone else mentioned this too, I'm not going to rely on the school system to teach my kids nothing. I'm not going to depend on no teachers to teach my kids anything. I'm going to teach them
right.
first.
Right,
and
that's a fact.
I communicate with my daughter. I have a sixth grader, one to seventh grade. And when she come home from
crucial
school,
time
every day, we talk about the things that they discussed in class. And I talk to her. I've always had communications with my kids. I think it's very important as parents to have a good communication with their kids. So that way we set the foundation. So I don't
right.
have to, although you have to be watchful, but that way we don't have to feel so threatened by the way of how society do education, and I guess just the corruptness of education and just people, period. Because like I said, it can be just the teacher that's just dealing with their own issues and may say something out of line to the class.
Yeah. Go ahead, Shamar.
I'm sorry, I've been holding it for a second.
Nah, you cool. Go ahead. Get in there.
Because I know we had a conversation before where I like to challenge black men, right, when we're talking about issues that oppress black women. So when you hear yourself talking about these issues, I want you to put it in line of when white folks talk about racism. Right. And
there
so
you know,
some of these
yeah.
word choices that we're using, I want us to be very mindful. I know this is not going to be a popular statement that I'm about to make with us. Right. But I need to be very clear that when we're talking about another marginalized group, I want us to hear the word choices that we use and the things that we say and imagine how we would feel if white folks were talking about that when we're talking about racism, when we're talking about introducing LGBT issues into the classroom or even an idea of being teaching acceptance of differences and how we're saying it as though it's this mass plan. I know folks feel that there's a gay agenda. I get that. I hear that. But I'm saying to you that when we're talking about educators in the classroom, we need people to realize that whether we agree with someone's life choices or lifestyles or varying sexuality, whatever it may be, that we've had these conversations about other things, right? And there are direct parallelisms to be made between the LGBT thing. Not saying that the LGBT things that are going on in the LGBT community or against the LGBT community are exactly the same as the issues that we face as black folks, but I'm saying there are some definite parallelisms to be made. So when we're talking about even something as small now in 2018, right, of this interracial issue, interracial couples, that was something
right.
that was an issue, a hot topic at 1.2, where we were talking
yes,
about, oh, facts. No, they're just pushing this agenda and they're trying to dilute the white race and all these other things, all these other
right.
words that we're using too right now to describe their challenges that were used against us when black folks got integrated into the schools. Oh, we got black folks that's going to teach these folks these wrong things. Like there were so many other times that marginalized groups, we brought it into the school system and folks said the exact same thing. I want to be very clear
indeed.
That I am not opposed by any means. This is me myself. This is not the show. This is me as a
right.
person.
Right.
Of folks teaching acceptance of other folks. I am a strong believer. You do not have to accept or believe anything. You don't have to subscribe to it yourself. And I'm not telling folks to go out and tell people what to do, right? It's the same way with religion. I don't teach religion in my classroom, but I darn sure would teach people to respect these differences, whether you're a devout Christian or you're an atheist. I absolutely believe that you're supposed to respect other people's differences. And I mean, that's, and whether you said that the teachers are human, they are. And I don't think that they would, I don't think that every teacher who is teaching acceptance of LGBT are because they are a part of that group. I think it's because it is a common human courtesy to respect other people's differences.
Right, I agree with that. That's a fact. I want
to y'all ready for me to tie in on this? Because you know I'm gonna go hard.
Not right now.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just want you, because I know when you had first came in, you said that you couldn't hold something in. So, I just want you to be just a little more clear and specific as far as what did you mean. Was this something that, if it's something that I said, I want you to tell me, what did I say, what words did I use, and just overall, like, what was the issue with, if there was one?
There's a little static. I can't really hear all the way, but
feedback.
I think you're...
We're getting some feedback somewhere, if you can mute your line.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. I think it was the word choices, not just yours, but the word choices that I often hear. Some of them clearly were some of the things you said, like that this is the initially it's going to come in a good way to try to teach acceptance, but then folks are dealing with their own problems or things like that, right? Where we're using these rhetoric to demonize folks for varying sexuality. That is something that has been a common issue in our country because of morality, which we're not going to dive into because that'll be a whole other talk show. But the fact that people have this right to dictate their lives when it's not hurting anyone or hurting themselves is something that we have to come to terms with, whether we accept it or not, whether we agree with it for our lives or not. And I feel like some of the rhetoric seems problematic when we're talking about teachers teaching acceptance of people of varying sexualities and also people who are different. I had a boy who chose to have pink paper, right? I grew up in a time where it was different from now when it came to how things are progressing for LGBT community. And so I'm aware of certain stigmas. I'm aware of certain associations. But at that time, as a teacher, I had to say, what's best for my child? What's best for these children? He said he wanted pink paper. The other boy said, no, that's a girl color. And so I had to figure out, how can I be as neutral as possible, which is about impossible, right? Because if you don't say something, then you're saying something, you're giving these other messages. And so I allowed him the freedom to choose his color. And although he's not thinking it has anything to do with varying sexuality, and it may not have absolutely anything to do with it, but that idea that I'm breaking the boxes, I'm coming outside of the boxes of what we were taught are masculine and what's feminine, that is political, that is challenging as a teacher. But I also feel like it is imperative for us to teach all of our babies, black, white, red, polka dotted, striped, that it is okay to accept people's differences and not speak about them as though there's something that is troubled or there's something that is wrong with them. We talk about things. I'm an advocate for all folks that are marginalized. We talk about things that are going on in the black community, and I'm here for my people. I am. But I also feel like I have to address things when similar things are going on with other marginalized groups. So the way we talk about people, I have to be very careful and I have to be very vocal when I see some things going on with other folks that have gone on with us, because I don't want anyone going through the same stuff that we have to deal with too.
Gotcha.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. I do want to say this. When I was saying that, now, what was the thing that you said?
The rhetoric. Are you talking about that? I said the rhetoric was problematic.
The specific thing that you said about. Now what I was meaning, just to be clear, because although I don't agree with a gay lesbian lifestyle, I don't knock anybody. They do, you know, people do what they want to do, and I don't have a problem with that. So when I was saying that, you know, that things may start off a certain way, I think that's in general. It doesn't just apply to them, discussing or introducing any type of homosexuality within the education. It doesn't have anything to do with that. I'm just saying, just in general, that's how things start off. So that's what I was meaning. So I wasn't being offensive to anybody. At least I wasn't intending to be offensive to anybody. I'm speaking, like, as far as in general, I think that's just how things are introduced in a subtle way, and then it progresses. Whether we're going to talk about whether it's has something to do with gay and lesbian, whether it has something to do with race, or whether it has something to do with anything. I think that's how it's introduced when we're talking about topics like this. I think that's how, that's my opinion as far as how it will be introduced in subtle ways. And unfortunately, we do have teachers, like I did say, they're human, and you recognize that I said that will unfortunately do things and say things. I'm not saying it is right, and I'm not saying it applies to every teacher, but unfortunately you do and you will have a teacher that may say something and go a little bit too far because of what they personally going through. And it doesn't just have to be with gay and lesbian. It can be with anything as well. So I would just mean in general things too, but we were talking about this, but in general I just think that's just how humans operate, and that's how people work.
Indeed. Now, we got about 14 minutes left to the live stream.
Hey,
yeah, I want to get Mufasa in there. You got to get you in there. If you keep it to about 4 or 5 minutes, but go ahead and get your spiel on.
I was trying to get somebody's attention, but all right, let me start off by saying this. This is Collective Minds Radio. Collective Minds meaning everybody got their mindset, and we all come to the table with different mindsets. Now, me, I don't mind being offensive. So my thoughts that I may express is strictly the thoughts of Mufasa Ra, okay? So with that being said, y'all know I do not agree with the gay lifestyle. And second, to me it's even crazy that we can address that. We can bring up, want to put that in the schools, but we can't bring up the fact that black people got a stronger history than slavery in the schools. Why we can put a gay agenda in the schools, but we're not going to address that black people got a much bigger history than slavery. Why the schools don't want to address the strong black leaders that we have in America? If they just want to stick on American culture, why they don't want to address our strong black leaders that we have in America?
Good point.
People like Khalid Muhammad or
Elijah Muhammad.
You know, a lot of people, you know, that they ban as being racist or anti-Semitic or whatnot. You know, so I don't even understand why they would want to put that in the school system, because to me it's unnecessary. You should be there for learning. You know what I'm saying? Now, I don't see how that fits in with promoting a gay agenda or making them feel accepted. But if you're not gonna make me feel accepted by talking about my people outside of slavery or talking about my people, my strong black people that's in America, then I don't feel like I should want to discuss, or I should be able to express myself and say, hey, I don't want to discuss nothing about gay or lesbianism in school. You know, I want to discuss my culture. Teach me about my culture. I don't really care about a gay or lesbian, gay-lesbian attending school. I want to learn about my culture. And if you're not going to teach me about my culture, then let me step away from the American system and teach my own people. I think we should get back to homeschooling and teach our own kids and our own communities about ourselves. You know, as
indeed,
far as that gay lifestyle,
indeed.
Go ahead, bro.
Y'all go ahead. I was just going to say, indeed, we got about 10 minutes left, so I do want to ask, I guess, this one last question. It kind of pertains to what he was saying. Yeah, I know you wanted to get in there, but we're going
to have to talk
topic.
Outside of this. We're going
to
do another show or something.
We have to talk online. Right. So I want to ask you this, though. Let's say, because you're an educator, let's say you have a classroom that looks mm-hmm. like America, okay? Let's say 60% white, 15 or 14% black, 15% Hispanic, you maybe have 10% Asian. Is it possible to have a culturally responsive curriculum with all those different, all those different races and cultures in one class? Is that even possible? Or to Mufasa's point, do we need to learn different cultures? Because I just want to share this real quick, because what I remember as far as learning history in school was we learned about American history, of course. Everybody should, we Americans, so we should learn that. But as far as world history, mostly what we learned was Roman and Greek. You know, I remember, because I was a history fan, so I remember spending a lot of time on Roman and Greek. So it wasn't until after I got out of school that I started learning about, you know, different African cultures, some Babylon, Sumerian, Chinese cultures, these different things I had to search for outside of the American system. So that was my question. Is it possible for us to have this culturally responsive curriculum with all these different races and cultures that are in American school systems? Is that even possible?
I would like to say that it's absolutely possible, especially considering that my class is marketed as a culturally responsive classroom.
Okay.
So my background is in Black studies, but I also feel that if a teacher, you're not going to be an expert on anything, right? You're going to be an expert in your field because that's what you grew up in. This is the skin I grew up in. This is what I've been formally educated in. But I also go a step above, and this is not something that's unique to me, right? I'm not tooting my own horn, so I know other educators, great educators, that do the same thing. And that's why their classrooms are successful. You go outside of what's required of you, because if you're in this field, it's not for the money, I'm sure. It's for this love of helping children and wanting to educate children and shaping the youth. And so if you step outside of what you've been taught, you step outside of this authoritative role and realize you're here to service them, you're going to want to research things about their culture. You're going to want to research things about them. And one thing that's the easiest way that I've found to make sure that I'm touching, because I've had Black students, Asian American students, Latino and Latina students in my classroom, European American students, Native students, all in my classroom. And so the one thing that made it easier for me was to bring in the parents, building that rapport with the parents and asking them, what is the most significant part of your culture that you feel that I must absolutely include in my curriculum? What is important to you? Not just reading the book, because we know books are this uniform idea, but I want to know from these parents, because their culture is a part of who this grand scheme of their culture, but it's also their household presents a different kind of culture, how they execute theirs. And so I want to know from them. Every year I have my students do a cultural class assignment at the beginning of the year. I find out what's important. What do you identify as? Because when I first got in there, I got in trouble for calling a kid for on paperwork. I wrote down that she was African-American. A parent found out later, oh, she was livid. And that's because on my paperwork that I got, it said Black African-American. And the child phenotypically looked like she was a Black African-American. The parent was upset because she didn't identify that way, right? She identified as biracial, multiracial. And so I didn't include that. And because I didn't include that, she felt disrespected. And I didn't try to. So from then on, I want to know from the parent's mouth, what do you identify as? What's important in your culture? What's some things that you like to do to celebrate? Come into my classroom. Read to my kids. Read to something that's important to you. You know, of course, I'll review it before we do it. But I want you to feel included in this classroom. So when you give parents, especially marginalized groups, the opportunity to have a voice in their kids' education, it does something. That's empowering.
Right.
Imagine if your babies went, your kids go to school. Your kids went to school and you're used to them not feeling like you're the highest or the most powerful in this country because you're in a marginalized group. But then you have a teacher to say, girl, come on in. You want to read with the babies today? You know, and they talk to you in a way that they're not putting themselves above you because they got all this education, right? They talk to you in a way as we're human to human. What's important to you is important to me, so therefore we work together to work with our babies because these are our babies now. So I think absolutely it can be done. I think it's constantly being done, especially with the folks that I've talked to in the district that I work for. I think there are some stellar teachers who are out here doing the exact thing that makes it work. That's why when you pose the question at the beginning of the show and you asked about the American system, I had to make a point that they're all different, right? Different schools, shoot, down to different classrooms are different than the whole school system. And so it's how you implement these ideas. It's what you do to make sure that babies of marginalized families and marginalized cultures are included in your classroom and celebrate it first and foremost.
There you go.
And it can be done.
There you go. There you go. Okay. Indeed. Great. Now, I do want to, because we need to wrap up in about 5 minutes, but we do like to offer solutions. So by you being an educator, if you can talk to, you know, specifically black parents or just parents in general, what advice or what solution would you give them? And if you keep it to a minute, that'd be great. But give us a solution to the parents of what they need to do when sending their kids to school or whatever within the educational system. Tips for parents.
Okay. I'll be as simplistic. I know it's deep, but I'll be simple. One, work with your babies on what's going on. But in order to work with them, you have to be educated first, because a lot of our parents are educating the same system that's failing their babies. So you need to find a group. You need to find a group that educates adults for free, right? We got the Better Family Life, where we got these areas within Better Family Life where you can go and find out some information that will help you educate your baby. And if you don't know, find somebody who does, right, that's outside the school. Or if you find a teacher in the school, that's great too. And then two, check in those classrooms. Do some pop-ups, baby. I'm not saying be an enemy to your teacher, but I'm saying let them know that you care and that you're an advocate for your child, and that's going to make them want to work harder for your child, because they know once they leave their classroom that year, they still have that support at home. So check in and also teach them at home.
That's right. That's right. You heard it there, family, from an educator. And those are two great points. Those are definitely in the code book when it comes to education. So, again, we want to thank Ms. Shamari Hayes for coming on the show and spending some time with us, building with us, you know, giving us some good game. We had a great build. This is Collective Minds Radio. Again, check us out next week, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on the dot. We missed everybody on Mother's Day, so I forgot an announcement. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, benefit mothers, potential mothers, and, you know, everybody. So, again, Collective Minds Radio, thank you, Ms. Shamari Hayes. Thank my guest, Roger Starr, my brother Mufasa Ra. Had a powerful evening. And, you know, we wish everybody well. And love and light to the family. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yes, thanks, Shamari.
Thank you.
Good information.
Yeah, thank you.
This was great. Thank you. I appreciate it, you guys.
Yep, we appreciate you. And we look forward to the conference you have coming up. Again, I guess we do have a little time. Can you run that conference by us again so we can get that information out?
Absolutely.
There?
Okay, June the 9th, the Cricket Room Conference. It is going to touch on so many topics that affect our community. Come on out. Cricket Room Conference 2018 ticket. Just Google it. You'll find it. It's free. I'll see you there.
There you go. Yep. We'll see you there. Love and light to the family. This is a great build. Peace, y'all. We'll see y'all next week.